Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello. Propaganda is brought to you with Levi Solicitors. You can get 10% discount on your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Dan, Michael and Mosco with you on Propaganda. It's the show where we find out what is being said, what has been said about Leeds United. Bit hard this at the minute, isn't it? Really, given that we're getting pasted every week.
Yeah, it's not as fun, is it, as when we were... Well, at least scoring some important goals. There's only a certain amount of anger you can extract from a penalty in the 70th minute or whatever it was. It's not really very a rich seam to mine, but never mind.
It was a good penalty.
It was a really good penalty.
Oh, we've learned Rafinha can take them two ways. I know Aaron Ramsdale thought he was doing something in that match, but yeah, Rafinha, and he'll have prepared as well. He'll have practiced. Oh, if he does a stuttering run-up, I know exactly how to play. Didn't bother, just smacked it in the top corner.
The Normanton method. That's what I'd call it. East Lower Pole did pick up on this, actually, on the feedback form. Didn't mention how good Raf's penalty was. Proper smashed it.
It's hard, isn't it, when you've conceded four at the other end to really enjoy a good penalty.
It wasn't a massive cheer when it was awarded or scored, was it? It was more of a, yes!
I don't know.
It was 3-1, actually, at that point, wasn't it? Sorry.
Yeah, 3-1. And there was that small element of, we could... do something here, because I think Arsenal in the second half were pathetic and I hate them for everything that they did. Time wasting, taking ages over throw-ins, the Xhaka yellow-red card business, everything that went on was just, they should have taken it to a Manchester City 7-0 level, and I think it just goes to show the difference.
Would that have made you happy?
Well, I mean, well, at least I still... righteously and extremely object to Manchester City's, was it the 4-0 goal straight after half time that was deflected in off Firpo? Just a mess. Like De Bruyne, when they'd had that goal ruled out and he was like, okay, just give me the ball back and I'll stick it in the top corner so we can have it. You've got to respect that from a player like him. Whereas deflected shot off of our left back, rubbish. And then everything that Arsenal did in that game, just a lack of class. Whereas I'll applaud De Bruyne for that goal.
Arsenal's third was heavily deflected, wasn't it, actually? That was off, was it off Click? I think it was the shot. And it went, Melier would have almost certainly saved it, I'm going to say. But it went completely to the other side of him.
So that's now, we're down to 2-1.
Yeah.
And we'll say the last one doesn't count.
And they should be playing with 10 men,
yeah,
of course.
So it's 2-1, they're down to 10 men. All we have to do is equalise. And I think we should have that point.
Should say for the benefit of the new listener, this is a show that we do in two halves. First half is where we find out what Leeds fans thought of the result, and then we'll do the Arsenal fans in the second half. Always plenty of stuff that they do, isn't there? Let's face it.
I bet they're angry.
Well, can
about
we start
something?
We've got fans who are angry with us first of all, and I mean somebody, Daniela Wommoylen, somebody who's having trying to play on words with my name there. Thanks. Somebody saying it's the last season of Bielsa. Looking more and more likely that this is the last season of Bielsa's management, we really need to focus on enjoying every possible second of it, win, lose or draw, despite the defeat. That was an assumption because it was 3-0 at the time of writing. And then get Mosco on Skype for some positives, blah, 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 blah. I didn't need him on Skype because he's back now, you see. And then dovetailing neatly in with that is the ghost of Christmas past, who's going in with 2 feet on both you and me, Michael, saying that we are saying, without directly saying, that we want Bielsa gone at the end of the season. Pathetic. 15 tough games or so, and you want him gone. Pathetic. If you want him gone and believe we'd be better off, say it. Don't say, I'd never turn on him, but, or, it seems like we've reached our ceiling, so So then it continues.
This... I will say, I think this is going to be his last season because I think that's what is going to happen. It doesn't mean...
Yeah, that you want it to happen.
No, just like I predict we're going to get beaten most weeks. Doesn't mean I sit here thinking, well, fingers crossed, Man City will do us.
I mean, for me, there are two strands to this. One of which is that I accept I'm powerless in this situation to affect the outcome. So yeah, as was touched on there by my namesake, Daniela Van Moylen, I am trying to enjoy the good bits despite it being really, really hard work this season. And I'm like you, Michael. The other part of this is that I'm not willing it to be over. I just, like you, can see it coming a mile off. It just seems like all the pieces seem to fit in terms of where we're heading. And, you know, the other strand I was going to get at is that, is Bielsa above any form of analysis or criticism? He's delivered us something absolutely brilliant and it's put him hugely in credit. And when he does go, I want him to go on his own terms. I definitely don't want to see him fired. And probably if that means going down this season with him at the helm, then I guess we suck it up. So I'm prepared to accept that so he gets a nice exit at the end of it.
I was listening to Quickly Kevin, actually, and they did an episode about Brian Clough, and it was highlighting how he basically took Forest down in his last season and was absolutely loved there. And I think we could almost still see a similar thing with Bielsa. There'll be obviously a certain group would turn on him and, you know, be asking for him out before then. But I think he could actually take us down and a lot of people would still be like, well, I guess he deserves a chance. Deserved a chance to try and make it right
just,
until the
just
end.
To address one of the direct criticisms of the Ghost of Christmas Past. If I wanted him out, I would say so, but I don't.
Yeah.
Because I love the man dearly and I love a lot of the football, as well as accepting my powerlessness in this situation when I think, God, I wish we'd be more compact against Team X or whatever, or somebody's strolling through us for a laugh. I've given myself over to it, to the experience, and I think however it plays out, it plays out. Hopefully we've got enough to be 17th or above, and that's all I give a shit about this season. That's how I want it to end, if this is to be the end, and everything points to the fact that it probably is, but who knows, we might be wrong.
What do you think, Mosca? Do you think this is his last season?
I have no idea.
What do you think?
I don't know.
what does your gut tell you when you think about the way
my
that
gut
this
tells me that
heading?
He'll do what he wants in summer like he always does.
Yeah.
Like trying to guess in December feels pointless to me because a lot will depend on how the season ends. I don't know how it'll end and just what he wants to do. So I don't know.
And yeah. What the club wants.
Well, that's the other side. That's the point.
Club
is
wants that... I think that's where I see it probably being his last year because I think with the 49ers kind of looming and the way they're likely to run things because of the way American sports teams are generally run. And while I'm sure they are happy with the position he's got us into, they probably also are thinking we don't want a maverick dictator doing all of the deciding everything at the club,
because he's got a huge amount of power, hasn't he concentrated in his hands,
which has worked
at Leeds, yeah.
Amazingly well, it's worth saying. So you would, there is a strong argument that says, well, don't change it then.
Yeah, I mean, I posted something to this effect on Wacko when someone was asking me about it, and I just said I just think it's risk versus reward, and we've seen the rewards, as in league position, style of football, the returns on that have diminished this season. So that therefore increases the amount of risk that runs against it. That's how I feel about it. And then the risk is obviously, you know, the small squad, injury proneness, and all the rest of it. And it's just, I think it's just that the scales have probably tipped in terms of him leaving, just more in that direction. Like you say, when you factor in the big elephant in the room, which is the 49ers, do they want to expose themselves to the risk of this again? Because he will insist on a small squad. And I guess at the root of it is the idea that the squad needs a big overhaul, or does it? I mean, these are the unknowns that we have to kind of ponder about, don't we?
And we are coming into this on the back of a very bad week. And I wonder if on Sunday morning after the Chelsea game, we'd have the same attitudes because we were brilliant in that match. And then I looked at this morning because The Athletic ran a piece analysing where everything's going wrong. And they're all about, a lot of it was about... the stats this season and how much worse they are, and that we're at the bottom of every measure. But this week has done a lot of that. And if you take, I mean, math, me doing maths is always, you're talking about risk versus reward, that will enter into that. But if you take out the madness from this season, which is the madness of this week, Arsenal when we didn't have a team, Manchester City when I think they wanted revenge, as illustrated by the fact that Grealish and Foden went out celebrating and got themselves dropped over it like a modern-day Derby County. And then also, to be generous to us, to take out the scum game on the opening day, which was just bizarre. Our goals against per game takes us from to an average of 1.33 per 90, which would have us ninth in the Premier League. So far this season, we have been against our peer teams fine. And even if you put that scum game back in to not be so generous, we're 15th, 1.56, compared to last season when our goals against per 90 had us 14th. So if you take out this week, which has been completely mad, it's not actually as terrible as it has seemed to be. And that's where some of the rhetoric this week, where it's all, why doesn't he change? Why doesn't he change his system? Do something more defensive, go five at the back. Well, I don't know when between Chelsea, Manchester City on Tuesday, and then Arsenal on Saturday, you either have the time or the wherewithal or the reason to change the way we play, particularly when you take into account for the Arsenal game, Charlie Creswell was going to play and Luke Ayling was going to be right back. The last informal training session on Friday of the week, Charlie Creswell dislocates his shoulder. And then are we expecting to say, right, Cody Drammer, you're going to be in the team on Saturday. Everything we've taught you over the last two seasons so that you can just step seamlessly from the under-23s and play the same way. Don't do any of that because we're changing everything.
Yeah,
it doesn't really marry up. It's very easy, and Bielsa made this point himself where he said it's very easy to rip up a plan. It's really, really difficult to put in a new plan and expect it to work for the next game the way that everybody seems to want it to do. So the two things on that is the rest of the season this week apart isn't that terrible, and that changing is not as easy as people would wish it to be. And again, I mean, against City and with the team we had against Arsenal, I think you were in both games, you're picking a way to lose, because I don't know what this magical formation is that stops you from getting beaten by Man City, or how you don't lose to Arsenal with, it was 9 first team players out, and it was 10 actually, wasn't it? And then 11 when Jackie Harrison's off the pitch. So an entire team gone.
Peter Andre Mariner, definitely his real name, suggests we need to abandon the 4-1-4-1 formation and play two central defensive midfielders in front of the back four.
We don't have to.
Says every game we get overrun there and Bielsa refuses to change it, we've been found out. But that feeds back into what you just said, Moscow. You know, it's at the root of what we're saying there about the idea of wanting Bielsa out. Not at all, because I know that we're too far in now to start changing stuff massively.
The cost of changing this season, I don't know what we would change to that would be better. And we're only getting found out against Manchester City and Arsenal when we don't have a team. Those are the games in which we've been found out. The rest of the time, we're mid-table-ish. And probably where we should have been last season. In a way, last season feels like, I think we said before, the overachievement should be praised rather than seen as the norm. We could have had, if it wasn't for the brilliance of last season in retrospect, we should really have had two seasons exactly like this.
I feel like the injuries have almost been underplayed when it's been talked about in the media as well, because people have looked at the team sheet and gone, oh, well, Luke Ayling's there, ignoring the fact that Luke Ayling is playing as a left-sided centre-back despite being a right-back. And they've gone, well, and Dallas is there. It's like, yeah, but he's not really a left-back either. He's a right-footed midfielder stroke right-back playing on the left. We've got Adam Forshaw, who is making still about his, what, sixth appearance or something after 2 years out. We've got Robin Koch, who's not played any under-23s football since going off injured on the first day of the season. Like there are holes all over the team in places you maybe don't even realise at a glance, because none of the senior players are actually fully fit. Even Rafinha's probably carrying a knock for half of that game because he'd been twatted on the ankle. And then you're down to saying, well, Meslier, who's a 21-year-old goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. There is not an awful lot in that team to build around. Because I saw some Arsenal fans as well saying, our Leeds are complaining about only having kids to play, but you know, we've got it was Martinelli and
we've only got three £50 million players in reserve.
It was Martinelli and Saka playing, but it's like, yeah, but let's look at who they were playing against. They had Lacazette up front, we had Joe Gelhardt, they had in midfield, they had Partey and Xhaka and Odegaard, who were all, you know, probably paid, I don't know how much to pay for Odegaard actually, but he's kind of been a wonder kid for years and has about 200 games under his belt. Like the levels of experience and investment in there isn't at all comparable. So and having integrating some young players is a good thing. Having to say to Cody Drama, yes, you're playing right back alongside a completely patched up defence and with a not great midfield, certainly not first choice midfield in front of you, it's obviously a much more difficult gig. And Saka and Martinelli are both quite experienced, but in comparison, and that, which I know they can say, well, because we've developed some good young players and well done for that, but well, it's not comparable.
Because they've been in the Premier League since 1919, well, the top division since 1919. And while we're on the kind of, I'm feeling a little bit defensive of Bielsa and such, but there's one of the reasons why the injuries aren't getting much attention is because a lot of people pundits and so on are using them to kind of justify their long-standing opinions. Whereas I told you burnout would catch up with them. That's murder ball for you. And when...
Well, sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say the comment from Wisconsin Todd, who's under the caption of injuries here, says, does have issues with Bielsa's thin squad and lack of adjustment in his tactics, but the injury situation is so farcical. How can you not just laugh at it? Yeah. So there's just, it's a grey area, isn't it?
And it's not
there's
even,
truth in all of it.
If you could say that all 10 injuries were directly attributable to the way he trains the players, then you'd have an argument against him. But as we said, Jackie Harrison getting kicked is a dead leg. That's nothing to do with training. Charlie Creswell, we were talking about it on the match ball as to whether that was a murder ball injury, but they wouldn't have played murder ball last week because they had a midweek game. It didn't occur to me until afterwards. And then Bielsa has said it was, he's described it as an informal session at the end of Friday. So I wonder if they were just mucking about and somebody's fallen on Charlie Creswell, but it wasn't like...
Pylon.
It wasn't...
birthday bumps maybe for someone? It was Rafa's birthday, wasn't it, through the week?
It could be that.
What, and Charlie Creswell had to have the bumps. That seems a bit...
He just might have fallen under the bottom of the pile, though.
Well, you're not going to give him to Rafinha, are you? Oh, we'll take it out on him. And then Pascal Struyck's foot, it sounds like somebody's just kicked him. What other injuries have we got?
Cooper and Phillips, the Cooper, and Bamford. That's the sort of spine of the team that's gone.
Cooper is a... It was a weird fall in that game, wasn't it? It wasn't like a hamstring where he was running and it pinged. He's fallen funny and his hamstring's gone. Calvin, he's had this long-standing problem with his calf. And when he went off in that match, he sort of started holding his ankle, then he's holding the back of his knee, and then it turns out it was his hamstring. So I think his leg is gone. Mm. It's a leg problem.
Was it? Well, Pascal's colliding bones has said, if Arsenal had any self-respect, they'd have played some children or at least given us Ben White for the game because he'd have loved it. It felt a bit like that Michael Owen video where he's smashing goals past the child who's in net. Well done, he's 13.
Yeah.
It was a little bit like that.
It did. It wouldn't... I have not checked the footage back to see if it was spotted on TV, but the way that Arteta and his bench celebrated at full time was so strange given that the game was won at half time. It should have just been, well, that there we go. We've confirmed what we already knew. We've won this game, which you'd won before they even left London. But then to be giving it all this, like, yes, we've really done something. We've proved something. We are Arsenal. We are great. Absolutely pathetic.
Just going back to that that Athletic article that you mentioned there, Moscow, which I found quite interesting. So I have a little read through that this morning. And one of the things they picked out was the number of times we concede possession in our defensive third. In other words, that chip out to the fullback. People are cutting out our passing lanes down there. We can't play in those, you know, because I bemoaned it earlier in the season when we're not doing those little interchanges of passes. We're still trying them quite a lot, but I think people have sussed out that's where we like to play our football. So we maybe do need to adapt a little bit because Neil Warnock is a character. He's in the comments, the feedback saying, why do we keep passing the ball to the other team? Do they know it's not what you do in football? And Tom H as well, similar comments. And we're seeing a lot of that, aren't we? Just conceding the ball in silly areas. And I think, and I go back to the idea of being powerless, it's just that the players have genuinely hit their ceiling against a lot of other exceptional players. And you were saying like about that midfield and the thing that I took from the Arsenal game, I think I mentioned it on the match ball, was just seeing like Odegaard popping up in little pockets of space and pinging it inside or just finding himself a yard. And that's because he's a Champions League footballer.
And the thing is, you say about finding the ceiling of the 11 we have on the pitch, I think is the crucial thing to stress.
Yeah.
Phillips and Rodrigo in that, the middle of that team with Bamford ahead of them, although I thought Gerhardt did very well, but that's a much more able team if you put those players in. And at the moment we're having to play as well, like I would say Harrison and Click are both quite badly out of form generally speaking, and ordinarily with the full squad would be dropped. The fact is we can't drop them because although we might have to drop Jackie now, but under normal circumstances probably you have Forshaw in Click's position and you have Dan James and Rafinha on the wings and Harrison's on the bench, but we don't have the players to do it at the moment, so We just have zero flexibility in there. So we're having to play people who are coming back from injury, people who are out of form, and then there's about two players in our team who actually are fully fit and ready to go.
Yeah, the comparison's been made between how many games Harrison and Alioski played together last season. So they get that understanding, whereas Firpo's been in, then out with an injury, then in, then out with COVID, then in, then out with a suspension, and then Jackie's been in and out because of form. And with the fourth goal, it's Tyler Roberts missing his pass to Cody Drama, and it's like, under what circumstances are these two players connecting in that position on the pitch? Ideally, it wouldn't be either of them playing there because neither of them are the first choice in the first team. So building up those understandings, which a lot of it depends on. But again, it does go back to when we were picked off very easily against Manchester City, who are world-class. Arsenal, when there's just no first-team players. And it was interesting, Robin Koch was one person saying to Melier during the first half, he was like, aim for Rafinha, just get it out of here.
I noticed that, by the way. Yeah, they were kicking for the wingers rather than kicking for the fullbacks a little bit more against
it
Arsenal.
And we
limited him to four instead of seven, so that's good.
But I think it was interesting, it was a little Robin Koch coming straight back in and saying, stop doing that, stop giving it to Cody, just get it out to Rafinha as early as you can. And the Chelsea one, Melier to Dallas. Dallas isn't a right back, so it maybe works better if it's Melier chipping to Luke Ayling, which is what we're more used to. So it's this.
It's funny lack of leadership. Yeah, Tom's in the comments again talking about lack of leadership because we've lost some characters out of the dressing room. Not characters in the Neil Warnock sense. Characters in genuinely big characters. So that could be part of it, and it's just another factor in a number of factors. And just talking about squad size and going back to the idea that Bielsa can't be criticised. I think the squad size is too small, and I've thought it's been too small since he's got here, but I've enjoyed just about every minute of him being here as well. That's the other side of that particular coin. And I know why he does it. I don't necessarily agree with it, but
worked for three seasons.
Grey areas.
We finished third, should have gone up. We won the league, and then we finished ninth, higher than anybody expected. So I don't know what point during those three seasons we needed a bigger squad.
It's weird how there is obviously now a lack of squad players there. But when you look at the first couple of seasons when we were really like seat of our pants with central defenders, we essentially went into it with Berardi as the starting centre-back. And now you look at it, we've got loads of central defenders, but they're all injured.
Like, yeah.
It's a ridiculous situation that we've got ourselves in, that you'd think those two seasons we were massively at risk. Now you'd look at the squad and go, right, well, we're absolutely fine for centre-backs. There's no need to worry. You know, at the moment, Llorente, Cooper, Strouk and Creswell all out. Ayling's having to fill in there, and it's just... It's so unlucky.
What Bielsa said in his post-match after the Arsenal game, he listed everything that's happened over the last week and then said normally these situations would resolve themselves, and they haven't. And his plan with the small squad, he referred to this as well, where he's sort of saying if we sign more players, it blocks a path for the youngsters who we want to develop, and that ideally a player being injured should be the opportunity for one of the youngsters who we want to see to come into the team and play well. So Bamford is injured, Joffe gets his chance. A defender is injured, Creswell gets his chance. But when you've got so many injuries, it becomes a weakness when it should be, the plan is for it to be a strength. And I don't know, it has been three seasons of success, and then...
It goes back to what I was saying, Moscow, about
failure.
Well, yeah, it goes back to what I was saying about it works until it doesn't.
Say that about anything though, can't you?
Well, that's it. But, and you can only ever judge these things with the aid of hindsight. So we're always commenting from a position of greater knowledge, aren't we?
Mm.
That's the stupidity about what we're doing. The ref and VAR, we should speak about that. The COVID situation is mentioned, should the game have gone ahead. Bigger question, I guess, about the general state of football. We'll do that on the main weekly show after this one, so park that one. But yeah, going back to the ref and the VAR stuff, very, very interesting, quite timely as well. And I will have to apologise to whoever it was that reported on this, but did you see the information that emerged over, like, I think it was Monday evening, where was it Peter Walton? Somebody had spoken to Peter Walton and he'd said certain players are judged differently based on their prior reputation, essentially. So Harry Kane got away with not being sent off because they don't feel like they have to proactively manage him going into games, whereas some players they do.
So I will say, Granit Xhaka has a reputation for being an absolute knobhead and still got away with it. So I don't know how that works.
But there was basically saying that because, like, for example, Robertson was jumping to avoid Kane's tackle. Was it Robertson who was involved in that? Wasn't it? Yeah, because he was involved then in the goal and then got sent off himself. Because he was jumping to avoid it, that helped Kane escape the red card, which is madness and is not what it's about at all, surely.
Should have stayed still and had his leg broken. Mm. Then we could have seen Kane sent off and it would have been fair.
Yeah, they've bent a lot of things out of shape to keep Harry Kane on the pitch. And
they've also bent a lot of things out of shape to back their referees as well, was the other point of this. Mm. And you've said this before, like, they've got themselves in such a mess with trying to basically back the on-field decision that, and you've said it, Michael, as well too, it can be both a red card and not a red card depending on the outcome, and, you know, and depending on
like the Man City,
what happens afterwards, and, you know, whether there's a blue moon or whatever.
Well, the Man City one, they've tried to justify that under the rules as well, haven't they, where Edison just slides through the box and completely clatters into someone, but they're saying it's not a penalty because he's not got the ball. But isn't that...
The other player has long since got the ball, hasn't
he? Isn't that still a foul, though? You can't just slide into people off the ball, because if they've not got the ball, that makes it worse, doesn't it? That you've been so late that you've just taken someone out when the ball's like 5 yards away.
Yeah, I mean, if the ball is over on that side of the area, being contested and the goalkeeper comes out and slides through an attacker over here in the 6-yard box, that's a penalty, isn't it?
Yeah, you're just not allowed to do it. But instead, rather than go, oh yeah, that was stupid, wasn't it? Sorry about that. They've gone, well, actually, no, you're wrong. I know to anyone watching, that would seem ridiculous that you can slide through someone, but actually that is fine because yeah. we're not willing to admit that we've gone wrong on this.
That's it. They're coming from VAR from the wrong direction of trying to support the referees to make it look like the referees make big, strong, clever, right decisions on the pitch more often than they do, instead of accepting that I've been listening to a lot of PLs lately, but mistakes are part of football and they're part of human life. And instead of saying, oh, you've made a mistake, you need to give a different decision, they're going, well, if we start, you know, if we keep saying the referee's making loads of mistakes,
it'll undermine them, Moscow.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas what is undermining them is that we can clearly see what they're doing wrong and then the VAR isn't correcting it.
It's like the internet arguments, you know, Twitter arguments, when somebody gets something wrong and they're proven to be wrong, and then they double down. Mm. Well, it's almost like that, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's more this idea that mistakes are weakness. And if a referee makes a mistake, they're weak. Whereas, and maybe that's correct because of the way that everybody is, and people will start saying, well, if they keep having to be overruled by VAR, then what are they doing?
It's to help, isn't it?
You need to get into that position where there is no shame in a referee needing VAR to help them understand what happened.
It's the ridiculous situation of if Xhaka's sent off there. There was some confusion about pronunciation as well. I think he was called Saka and Xhaka at various points. Granite. If he's sent off there, VAR probably doesn't tell the referee to overrule it.
Yeah.
They probably go, oh, no, that's the right decision. Whereas as it is, they watched it and went, you didn't give anything for that. Also good.
but that's also right.
And, well, but
VAR can't tell them to give him a yellow either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which just adds to the farce of it.
It's completely insane, isn't it?
As I always said, VAR would be most useful if you have somebody watching the game who can just get in the referee's ear and go, book him for that.
Lee from the Cheese Wedge is asking, do we look a bit tin pot compared to other teams because we're creating a good atmosphere even though we're getting battered? No, not at all. I think it's brilliant.
It does cross my mind sometimes because you sort of think, I don't know if this is the right thing to do, but
I don't,
sticking with it. What's the alternative?
Why turn on them? Why not support them through this? There's nothing good to be gained from turning on them just for the sake of outside appearances.
And I thought it was genuinely quite moving, I thought, at the end of the game, seeing the players going round and still getting the applause. And as well, like the last players off the pitch were people like Sam Greenwood. And you think, well...
Put some respect on Tyler Roberts' name, please.
Well, yes.
I stayed until the last player was off. And I was talking about this last week. He is always the last player off. He always makes a point. The end of every game, applauds all four stands which are all full of people who absolutely hate him, and then is always the last person off. And I think I kind of admire that he has this routine of whatever happens, he's going to do that. And I noticed all the players have been saying how important the support is, and it was interesting. You expect it from like Forshaw or Dallas or the senior players who kind of, and you wonder sometimes if it's a line. I think it was the Crystal Palace game when Tyler Roberts did the post-match interviews, and before the person had finished asking the question about the atmosphere, his face lit up and he said, the fans are absolutely incredible. I love playing here. And, you know, it does make you think he definitely does not look at what people say about him on Twitter, which is for the best.
Yes.
but for him to be feeling that, and you could say it was obviously genuine reaction, the way he couldn't wait to say, he put it on his Instagram story as well. After the Chelsea game, somebody had said, there was like a photo from one of those football like Bible accounts of Leeds fans saying, can't believe this support, and Leeds fans are different. And it was a photo of some people in the away end at Chelsea. And Roberts screenshot that and he put, I think his caption was something like, you'd better believe it because this is what Leeds is all about and how much he loves that support. So to then decide that all of that's tin pot and we shouldn't do it because it looks a bit daft.
It counts. It counts.
It does make a difference.
I think as well, there is a difference between now and other times because there have been, I will freely admit, there have been times I have not stayed to clap the team after 4-1 defeats. I've stayed to yell abuse at them once or twice when you can tell they don't give a shit. Like under certain managers, certain players, you've been like...
Well, I mean, Michael Brown was there.
It's very clear several of these players do not give a toss about playing for this club.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with calling them pricks. We
remember Michael Brown played until his contract extension was triggered and then disappeared from the team. So what does that tell you about his priorities when he was a Leeds player? I hated seeing him again on.
Hey, listen.
On but Saturday. Yeah,
Sam Greenwood does not deserve that negativity.
No. Let's
Cody Drama. Fine. He didn't have a great game, but fine. I'm not happy to shout at him.
Let's finish this section on some positivity because we've heard from Slip and from Ken Bates. Stole my seat. Just saying, look, you know, the season's not over, and I know we keep saying this, and we keep waiting for it to click into gear, and hopefully things will turn around. And you know, it does look pretty bleak when you're going into the halfway point of the season with only 3 wins under your belt. But as we've said loads of times, these are not the games that, including Liverpool, that we're going to be sort of judged on this season. It will be what we do against the other teams. And we probably only need, 5 wins, 6 wins to stay up from here? It's not a huge amount, is it? Because it is remarkably mediocre as the Premier League, and we happen to just be not very good this season.
And there is still January.
There is. So we've got January, the opportunity to reinforce, whereas Newcastle are trying to build a team as good as our rubbish team. That's their task in January. Everybody's worried about them with all the money they've got. But if all we have to do is get our good players fit, and then we've got a good team again. Whereas the teams that are below us, Norwich and Newcastle, and who knows about Burnley this year, but they have a lot more work to do to be as good as we will be once we even have. It doesn't even need all of them back. We just need a few back so that then we can be a little bit more like an actual Premier League football team than the lineup that we've been putting out. And you don't need to do much to stay up. And even as bad as the table looks, we're 6 points off of the relegation places, 6 points off being 10th. So it's, you know, are we panicking about finishing 10th?
Mm. It's not the 10th aspect I'm worried about, but anyway, you know, it's when you look in the rearview mirror.
Either way could go, couldn't it? And we didn't have that big run of wins last season until it didn't start until about, well, it was 10 games from the end when we suddenly got good, wasn't it? Until then, it was kind of average all the way. And we need to get back to average soon.
I think part of that is actually to do with timing. If you look at when we faced the likes of Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea, Man United last season, it was when they were all in the thick of the European competitions as well. So maybe they've got one eye on other stuff as well. So in the second half of the season, hopefully if a couple of them are, you know, otherwise distracted, there's a chance maybe if we get some players back, then you can start to pick 1 or 2 points up here against those teams. But the business has to be done against the likes of Burnley and so on and so forth. I think that's where, if we turn up against Burnley, assuming all that does go ahead and there's not a COVID shutdown, if we are shite in that game, then I think maybe there are questions to be asked. But it's always going to be judged against the injuries as well, isn't it? People won't forget that.
If you've got an injury crisis, what you really need is to play Burnley.
And then the weird thing is, and Bielsa had a bit of bewilderment about this as well, is that Chelsea was only 7 days before Arsenal, and it was our best performance of the season. And that was not even a first team. So if we get back to how we were against Chelsea, and that's again, I think it's another argument in favour of not adapting and not changing the way we play just for the City and Arsenal games, which, because of the quality of City and the injury crisis against Arsenal, we probably weren't going to win anyway. It's just, instead of distracting yourselves by ripping it all up and trying something else to try and get something out of some games that we probably would have lost them anyway. I said about the City match that you go to play them, you're basically choosing the way that you want to lose, because once they score, they're out of it. May as well stick with what we're doing and keep honing that so that when we do come up against Villa and Burnley, Southampton, all the rest, we can beat them.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
So what have Arsenal been saying about us then? Quite a lot, by the looks of it. We've got a long way to go with this setup, haven't we, if we're going to try and match what AFTV have been up to? Christ.
I mean, there would be a lot to go at, but they were all like saying the same thing, more or less.
All 18 videos that they've done on the Leeds
game. Have they genuinely done 18
videos?
There
are 18 videos.
That's not an exaggeration.
About the Leeds United match. So
it's only been 2 days. How have they done 18 videos in 2 days?
How many people have they got working for them?
I don't know, really. There's obviously Robbie's the main one. There's the Lee, who we'll come on to, who's the angry, should be a Millwall fan bloke. It's Turkish. I know him. There's Ty. I didn't see Ty. He's the idiot one. He's like the real sort of nominated, let's all laugh at what he's saying. He gets angry. There's a few of them that get angry on live streams and stuff.
About a 4-1 win?
Yeah, no, not about a 4-1 win. They're all fairly happy. They're all happy about that.
Well, that's all right now.
That's part of the problem with Arsenal fan TV is that they're very reactionary. So now
Arteta doesn't have to go to jail this week.
Exactly. So they're all dead happy at the moment, speculating as to whether they'd get the top four. Someone even suggesting whether they could push on and finish in the top three.
So all their misery was completely justified, wasn't
it? Yeah. So the first
their tough life they've got.
The first clip
in their 60,000 seater stadium in London, so it's easy to attract players.
We'll rewind to what surely, from the sound of this clip, must have been 6 months, a year ago, but actually was the 6th of December. This was what they were doing following Everton, which we did play. It was after the Brentford propaganda. I think we might have had this clip in because it was just their complete despair.
Right.
And this is Millwall.
This is how bad
things... This is Millwall fan disguised as an Arsenal fan, Lee.
This is how bad things have got.
Damari Gray done us over today.
What have we got to do? Can this cannot continue at this football club no more? Something has got to change.
They played us off the park today.
Seventh in the league again. You know what I mean? Just absolute prime points. Left, right and centre with a fucking idiot in charge.
Listen, we're meant to be, yeah? We're meant to be in this big six, Lee, yeah? We're meant
we
to be
in
this big six,
six
yeah?
We ain't in a big six with this manager now.
Last November.
I told it this is it. These three games was going to tell me everything I know about Mikel. Fuck off.
So that was then.
Hang on a second. Let's just recreate that.
Something needs to change at this club. Needs to change.
Do you know what's changed? They've won some games.
They'll never be big six. They were seventh at the time, a point behind Scum, 3 points behind, 2 points behind Tottenham.
Yeah, but Moscow, something needs to change at this club.
Yeah, he was judging him on that three games and needing to fuck off. Since then, they've had three games and they've been a 3-0 win against Southampton, 2-0 West Ham, 4-1 against us. And everything's actually fine, as it turns out.
Anyway, onto the actual match itself.
Yeah, the actual game, they were just sort of saying they were dead good. They were being really a bit overly smug about Martinelli. I couldn't be bothered including any clips because...
Do you want to do a quiz instead?
do we want to hear him saying like, oh, how good he was? Because then I just think my mind just goes, yeah, but
He's
playing against a child making his Premier League debut. Like, so what? Don't prove anything. So I went to the interesting bits of the game. Listen to the penalty. They weren't that arsed. They thought it was eventually. But the Xhaka foul is fairly interesting because there was three of them on the live stream. They weren't all in one room for this. I know sometimes they do watch-alongs all in one room, but there was just the three of them on a split screen. There was Turkish, who is quite sensible from what the Arsenal fan TV stuff I've seen. He seems like he's kind of the sane one that they've nominated. There's some other lad on it. And then there's Lee, the angry man. As I said, he's kind of a Millwall fan in disguise. And his views on refereeing and the foul that Xhaka did were kind of predictable, but I quite like it.
Players. Oh, Granite Xhaka's just done a Granite special by stamping on the guys. Oh,
no, leave it out. No way.
Hey, Lee, that's a bad tackle, that. That's a really bad tackle, that. He didn't need to do it.
He's got the ball there. He's got the ball.
He's not got the ball. He's not got, I've got to say, and this is
why... Well, like he got the ball to me.
No, he didn't, did he?
I mean, I think he did touch some of the ball.
Yeah.
But then he also did a big stamp on his ankle, which you're not allowed to do.
No.
But that said, should we leave Lee in charge of the refereeing? Because I feel like everyone will know where they are with it. At the moment, part of it is people don't know what's a foul, what's allowed, what isn't. I feel like with Lee, you know your line, don't you? And so if all the referees were operating under his guidance, it becomes a fair game.
So basically it's one rule, isn't it? Is it one rule? Like if you get the ball, you're fine.
He does essentially go on to argue that.
Because if Rafinha does that tackle at Chelsea, they don't get a penalty because he got the ball.
Eventually, yes. He did do a bit of man first, but I think Lee would say that was fine. He does essentially go on to argue that when he played football, if you got the ball, you could do what you wanted. And the other two are trying to talk him round and be like, but Lee, no, that's not the rule though, Lee. You're not allowed to do that. And he's like, well, it's fine. Eventually, they do sort of talk him round, and he does have to acknowledge that maybe it shouldn't be allowed to do that because there is a precedent in law.
Were they talked around as soon as Cody Drama did it to one of their players? Did that convince them that maybe...
Well, it was Gelhardt did it, wasn't it?
Oh, Gelhardt, yeah, sorry. After.
And in fairness to Lee, consistent, he was like, well, he's caught him a bit, I suppose.
See, Robertson at Spurs, he caught him a bit.
He's like, if he would have not even flinched. I know it wasn't a bad tackle, but the old dislocated ankle against Liverpool, he'd have been like, get up, you soft slag.
Walk it off.
Harold,
listen, you can get arrested for attempted murder. So, if it's intent there, like, you know, I suppose from that point of view, if you are intending to hurt an opponent, I suppose you need to be punished for it, even though you don't actually do it. You see what I'm saying?
Is he suggesting that somebody should have been charged with attempted murder there? Or is he just drawing a parallel?
I think it's a weird parallel, but it's just you can be arrested for committing crimes.
He sounds like a man who's learned from bitter experience as well. Oh, I didn't know you could be, but I didn't even kill him.
I only thought about it.
But you were stamping on his head. I was not doing it. Well, all right. There was a bit of intent there. Bloody hell. You can't do anything these days. Anyway, so that was the end of Arsenal Fan TV, really.
Is that all we're going to do? There's no point in wallowing in this.
18 videos, and that's all there was.
It was just them all going, oh, it's good, isn't it?
Can you imagine a world in which we do 18 videos a game?
We like bitterness. That's what this section's about. It's about hearing how angry they are about stuff, and there was none of it.
Well, I mean, it's not even funny, is it? Because I'm not sure all of it was factual. So
that is very true. Well, someone did highlight, I can't remember who it was now, a journalist was saying, oh, Leeds fans are singing Soft Southern Bastard at Martin Odegaard, but he's actually from 600 miles short of the Arctic Circle. They've only got it factually correct. So egg on their faces. It's like,
football chants and podcasts can only be factual from now on.
And I think everyone in Elland Road did think all of Arsenal's players were all from within the M25, was my understanding of it. So if they've snuck a Norwegian in, then that is news to me.
Sneaky. I mean, like, so when people sing to us Shit Yorkshire Bastards or whatever, is that allowed or is that wrong? Or
it's not factually correct. So
we shouldn't get upset about it.
So Rafinha's from North Brazil.
Right.
Mm.
Okay.
He's from further north than you.
Okay. Let's move on then to the wider world of propaganda. What else has been said in the football world? Because you're right. I don't need to sit here and listen to Arsenal being happy.
Let's listen to people slagging off Bielsa and get ourselves angry. That's what I thought.
Let's say, you know, if we do go down, can we face Championship propaganda next season? Or do I have to have a rethink?
I mean, it won't be as easy because there won't be 18 videos produced by who's in the Championship, Reading fans.
Christ, 46 match balls as well.
But I mean, as I was as I was on my COVID sick bed recently, sort of listening in, hoping that you were just about managing to keep the podcast going without
strength
me.
Strength to strength, some people said.
What do I find out? You started beef with a third division football team. Apparently they are now our rivals. As soon as my back is turned, some tin pot rivalry is stoked up. So I don't think we'll have any problem. Championship propaganda will be a step up from picking fights with Brentford.
I wonder, you know, if Paul Heckingbottom is onto this podcast because he's stopped the whip ball, the out ball.
If someone's told him, I'd be really annoyed about that.
Because they beat Fulham last night, the Sheffield United.
Four wins in a row. Sheffield United. And they only conceded against Cardiff in a 3-2 away win. I was just looking, actually, Paul Heckingbottom was trending on the Google last night, not even the Twitter, but searches for him, particularly in Scotland at full time last night.
From the Hibs region, by any chance?
It could be. Assuming it was a 7:45 kickoff, 10 minutes before the game started, there's a big Heckingbottom spike half time and then full time. Everybody's going mad for the Heck. And yeah, quite a lot actually. Quarter to six this morning.
It's
46. I don't know how many per whatever. All right. A value of 100 is peak popularity. So he had 46% popularity for his searches at 6 o'clock this morning.
What's the time delay with San Francisco? I think it's Parag Marathi on the lookout for a new manager. He'd be able to get on the phone and be like, there's this guy tearing it up in the championship. He's
young,
he's local.
Full of great ideas. He's got two big ideas. One with the ball.
But yeah, every week I'm listening to his bloody pre and post match press things to try and find with ball without ball.
Has he let you down this week?
Nothing.
What have we got then?
We've got the Football Terrace, which is, you might remember, this is the YouTube thing that gave a voice to Sonny, the Liverpool fan who wanted Pascal Strouk arresting for attempted murder.
He's the one who's proven quite unpopular, bless him.
Yeah, I had a look, since we made fun of his big desk, you know, he got his big desk, no, his big head, small desk, big head,
yes,
tiny drinks bottle.
He looked like a South Park character, didn't he?
Yeah, setup he had. He's not done any videos since then, bless him. So, but it's that same YouTube channel. This is run by someone called...
Well, maybe he's fallen over, because if you've got a head that heavy versus the rest of your body, he's like the opposite of a Weeble. You know, Weebles used to wobble, but they didn't fall down.
Yeah.
Maybe he's toppled over, like maybe like a turtle on its back.
Or maybe his mum's just said he can't use the conservatory anymore on a weekend. She's got friends over.
Take that bloody green screen down, Sonny. Right, next. Go on then.
It's Terry Flowers. He's the man. Flowers? Flowers? It's got an E in the middle. I don't know. He's like Tim Flowers, but it's gone wrong somewhere. But he was just having a pop at us, basically, after the Arsenal game, and in particular, Bielsa.
I think Bielsa is a great character. He probably is a great person. I don't know him. But people allow someone's personality to feed too much into their opinion on their profession, like how they are as a professional. And that, for me, is my issue with Bielsa. People use the word great next to his name. Fergie's great. Pep is great. Klopp is great. Arteta is great. Now, joking. Wenger is great. Like, the point I'm making is you can't call Bielsa great. Man's using man-to-man marking in 2021. Bruv, that's the equivalence of me using a file of facts. That's the equivalence of me using Betamax. Man-to-man marking in 2001. And he don't change it for no one. This ain't the championship, my G. Scott McTominay got a brace against these men. Scott McTominay got a brace. And that's what annoys me about him. That's what makes me so frustrated about watching Leeds United. Irrespective, I said the same thing when they played City. I said the same thing in all their games. This isn't an Arsenal thing. So Arsenal fans, please don't go, oh, you're not giving this credit. You were great. You were brilliant. I've already done the praise. But I'm talking Leeds for a minute. I want them out of this league so bad. I give me 19 Burnleys over one Leeds United. Oh, they're exciting. They're not exciting. We all love them because they're easy to beat. There's no jeopardy in that. Honestly. It's just, it's embarrassing. It really is. I'm going to go to some super chats now. I ain't done no super chats yet today.
Some super chats.
I mean, the first time I came across Terry Flowers, I actually thought he was Jamie O'Hara because he's got that same...
How to describe?
Annoying. He's like a real Cockney prick you might hear in a pub who you can hear over everyone. No matter where you sat, you can hear his fucking dickhead yapping on and then you see him.
Do you want to know what I think about Leeds?
No.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you. I hate having an opinion about it.
Don't.
I put it all in Bitcoin, mate. That sort of knobhead. Nah, mate, it's all in NFTs. You don't understand it. Fuck off, Terry. I mean, where to start on him?
From what I can gather, I thought he was a Chelsea fan.
Oh, is he? I thought he was a scum fan.
I just had a look at his Twitter and it's constant Chelsea. There's a photo of him with somebody in an Arsenal shirt. I don't know which one's which.
The worst kind of prick. That's what I'm saying.
And all his Twitter feed is just news about...
Oh, is it Chelsea? Oh, Chelsea. I knew he hated Leeds.
But he also says that Edison Cavani to Barcelona has cooled. So thank you for that.
I really like how we've completely played the man and not the ball here.
Well,
we've not addressed what he's talking about.
There's more of that.
About,
there's more of that to come.
Like when he's talking about Bielsa being people prioritising personality over anything else. And then he lists... Ferguson, Klopp, who else was in there, Guardiola, all famously, you know, nobody's ever paid any attention to the personality traits of those managers. It's not Football Manager. A manager's personality is a key part of the way that they coach a team. It's not, he can think what he likes about a man marking system, whether that belongs in the 1980s or the 2020s or not. the power of Bielsa is that he managed to convince a group of players to be so good at it that they got to ninth in the Premier League. So his personality is absolutely key. I just don't think, I mean, I'm not really going to take lessons about personality from internet personality Terry Fluers shouting about things that he doesn't really care about, because it would be so easy.
Or understand.
So easy if he, I mean, yeah, now
would
go,
you refer? Would you refer to Bielsa as my G?
He's now, as I go back.
He is my G.
To yesterday's tweets. God, he tweets a lot. There is now, I'm seeing Bruno Fernandes' face for some reason. I get the feeling he might just be a Premier League fan.
Is he a Premier League fan? Oh, God, the worst kind of person.
That's why he was all like, he wants Leeds out of his Premier League.
I'm on his Twitter profile, and his first thing it says is finance professional as well. So it is the big, I bet it is the fucking Bitcoins. I bet he'll be on that for you.
Finance professional. Oh.
Content creator. You hate the word content as well, don't you, Moscow?
Well, I mean, this is the absolute definition of content, where you've given somebody a show on YouTube to shout about things that they don't really care about, and then they have to desperately think about what they're going to shout about this week. So I'll just shout about Bielsa, even though I don't have any particular insight or anything new or interesting. I don't know the first fucking thing about him. However, I will just shout about it for a bit, and that will fill a gap. Content. You only need content if you've dug a hole. That's all it does, is just fill the hole that you've dug.
It's good to have you back.
With the thing about man marking as well, saying like you can't use it in this day and age, but we used it last season and the season before that, and it did really well. Is there a cut-off point where this season, it's been fine to the start of this season, then it's like, no.
Who was it?
That must not happen anymore.
Which team was it? You might remember because you dig out the clips, but one team early this season was complaining about the zonal marking system and said they should have gone man-to-man.
Well, everyone who concedes goals complains about the marking system, whether it's man marking or zonal marking. You can see the goal from zonal marking, everyone goes, it's much better to go man to man. The ball goes in on a post. You need men on the post. The ball goes in from a header. What do we have men on the post for? You need to be marking the men instead. It's a complete hindsight way of doing things that you can go, well, that's where they even do it on telly sometimes. They will know where a goal is going to be scored from. They'll draw a little box on where they know the ball is kicked into the goal.
There should have been a defender.
And then
there.
Go, defender needs to be marking that space. And you think, well, yeah, you know that now. But if there'd have been someone there, they might have passed it the other way. And then there'd have been a space in this place instead, and someone might have scored from there.
Again, one of the pleasures of having Bielsa in this Premier League is the way he does force you to think a bit more about things. And when he was talking about mistakes the other week, he said, if you look at every goal, somebody will have made a mistake. Otherwise, goals don't happen. And what do you like about football? Do you like goals? Then you need mistakes.
Yeah.
So getting angry about mistakes is a waste of time, because without them, every game's nil-nil.
And he said he'd win every game, didn't he, if his team were robots? But who wants to watch robots?
Well, exactly. That was his whole point, was not that he thought that a team of robots would be desirable and that's what he wants. It's just that that's impossible. You have to deal with humans and they will either win or they won't.
Right, next clip.
Sorry, Terry.
Well, Terry's invited some other wanker on because he thought him...
Is it Ethereum this time, mate? Oh, he thought it was Ethereum.
He thought
is it Ethereum? Is that the word?
Probably. The
got a lot of chilies.
The Dogecoins. I bet he's well into the chilies.
So sure. It's all that bollocks.
He'll be firmly into it. I really wish he'd not downloaded the app. I get notifications every day. We've got another Brazilian team that we've managed to call into our app. We've managed to persuade someone else that this is a good idea by
take our money.
Chucking some money at him. But yeah, this is just some other dickhead.
I agree with you. Leeds are the most fraudulent. I'll talk about the most fraudulent team in the league. Everybody, I couldn't stand it for the last few years talking about how amazing their football is and this. All I see is a bunch of dudes running around not playing defense. That's what when I watch Leeds, I can't handle it. I don't think it's not. I've never thought it's fun football. Just like you said, even with their first team, they're trash.
Don't watch us then. If you can't stand watches, don't watch us and just fuck off. Is that a fair outcome?
But it worked really well.
Is fraudulent actionable?
I hope so.
Confusing a club of fraud.
Should we try and sue him?
Well, not us, but maybe Leeds United want to take the case on. Next. I did actually just look at your Terry Fluers LinkedIn profile about he specialises in implementing solutions to address regulatory reform in the banking, insurance and investment management sector. Why the fuck am I listening to his opinions on Marcelo Bielsa? If he wants to do a banking podcast, fine, but I don't know why I need to listen to him telling me that Bielsa is a Betamax.
This is a complete tangent, but I discovered this the other day while searching old Leeds players. Monty Gimple is now a primary researcher at Norges Bank Investment Management.
Right.
He's in the old finances, Monty Gimple. So yeah, that's good. He's now branded as Montgomery Gimple on LinkedIn, if you're trying to find him.
He's using his name.
Well, he was always Monty, though, wasn't he, at Leeds?
Well, we call
he sure was, Michelle.
I'm fairly sure that the paperwork on his contract will have said Montgomery.
I'm going to still refer to him as Monty.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the changing room, you're not going to insist the lads call you Montgomery.
Colin.
So Monty will come up. But yeah, I mean, he...
getting annoyed at him using his name.
It's a stupid name, Monty. Apologies if you're called Montgomery and you're listening. It's a good name.
He's only been with them for 6 months, but he was at Bloomberg for a couple of years before that.
Come on, next one.
He was the... he was the assistant to the German representative of Invest Kazakhstan in 2018.
He certainly wasn't a footballer, was he?
Well, that's the bottom of his profile. Professional football player, Leeds United Football Club 2011 to 2013. Then a four-year gap, hopefully not David Haig style, before he became a marketing and business development intern at the Snooze Project in Berlin.
Great. Come on.
Do you remember people wanted him in the team? People were like,
well, he had a cool name.
It was pure agent hype, wasn't it? The whole thing.
There was a photograph of him doing like a really cool volley. So he looked absolutely perfect for us. And to be honest, who did we have in 2012?
Tom Lees.
He wouldn't get Lees out of the team. Liesenbauer was not for moving.
Come on, clips to get through. Let's do them.
Go on then. Right.
Never mind the banking sector.
We're just sticking with dickheads in this section. So Gabby Agbonlahor.
Oh, God.
Do we have to?
Yeah, go on.
Because we're giving it. I mean, to be fair, they're not getting ticks in diaries for listening figures, are they? Is this TalkSport?
Of course.
Okay. So I'm kind of doing this against my better judgment because it's essentially just clickbait in the form of a radio station.
Yeah, but we can use it as a...
We're feeding the beast here. No,
maybe he'll make some good points that we can discuss.
Let's listen and find out, shall we?
For me, with Leeds United, they've been so far out of the Premier League. You know, so many years they've been in the Championship. They finally got into the Premier League. Surely they want to stay there.
For me, 16 years, wasn't it?
For me, I would change Bielsa. I feel that the way they're playing at the moment, it's very stubborn coaching. You know, you're playing against like big teams, world-class players, and you're going toe-to-toe. You can't do that in the Premier League. For me, I'll change it. I'll get someone in who can keep Leeds United up now. Because Burnley, you look at the table here, Burnley have got 3 games land on Leeds, 5 points behind them. Do you know, they're playing with fire, they're playing with relegation, and if they did go down, it might take them another 16 years to get back up. So for me, I just don't understand it, that the atmosphere at the ground, the fans are cheering, you're getting battered every week.
It sounds
it's Sunday league scores.
Like they're fully behind Bielsa, that's what it sounded like to me this evening.
It baffles me, because if my team was losing like Leeds are losing, I wouldn't expect the fans to be clapping. You're getting humiliated, battered, Sunday league scores, 11 goals in 2 games. Like, this isn't how you play in the Premier League. Every team you play against, the top managers will change their tactics.
We could have played like Newcastle, couldn't we? Only have conceded 4 without one of our best lineups. That's another option. Do you know the reason why it baffles him? Why it baffles him that we're supporting him?
He's thick.
Correct. That's exactly the word I've written down. It baffles you because you're thick.
I wonder, because he's saying we're not getting results, we need to change style. I wonder if he went on last year when Sam Allardyce was getting West Brom relegated and suggested they play total football instead. So you need to, what Sam needs to do?
Change.
He needs to change this style because it's not working. They're getting beaten. See, Leeds absolutely battered them the other week. They need to do more like what Leeds are doing if they want to stay up.
And Burnley's such a strange example. I know they have the games in hands, but where he's saying, you know, they're 5 points behind Leeds.
This is Burnley.
Yes, they're worse than us.
Burnley have won 1 game all season.
Yeah, so we need to be more like
so Burnley. So their hot 3-4 game winning streak surely is just around the corner. All signs point to it.
I mean, is it even true that teams adapt against the top teams? Because I don't think Burnley play any different against Manchester City.
Burnley lose 5-0 at Manchester City every year, don't they? Every week
is probably not far from accurate. But yeah, they play the same way against Leeds as they play against Manchester City and lose both. They lost 4-0 to us last season and lost 5-0 to Man City. I don't know what the lessons are from any of this, other than, you know,
I enjoy listening to you, Moscow, but let's hear some real insight.
People will complain when you use the word thick about somebody like Gabby Agbonlahor.
But he is thick.
But what it means is it's a failure. It's a failure to imagine, because he can't understand why Leeds fans will cheer, because it's not something that he would do.
You're gonna, and it's a failure of imagination and being able to think beyond his own head.
You are going to change your opinion when you hear his tactical ideas, but it's worth saying that when Aston Villa were relegated and he was there, his solution to that was keeping Tim Sherwood in charge because he liked Tim Sherwood.
Right.
They brought in a Frenchman and he was like,
well, you can't know. I mean, that's the worst thing. So it's
almost like Gabby Agbonlahor changes his opinion based on unique individual circumstances that will provoke a response in his audience. Do you think that's maybe what he's doing?
Potentially.
That's the one thing he's good at. But anyway, trying to be controversial.
Anyway, his tactical ideas are controversial.
Are they as good as your tactical ideas?
Because wait till you hear this.
Okay.
I think Bielsa could play Bayern Munich tomorrow and put Ailing 1-1 versus Sané. You know, like, if I'm a Leeds player, I'm saying in the changing rooms afterwards, like, oh, Lance, he's killing us. He's killing us. We can't do this. I'm not as good to go 1v1 against these superstars. Do you know what I mean? You've got to have cover 2v1 all over the pitch.
Right.
2v1.
22 men.
All over the pitch. Yeah. That's his method to sort this out. And that would help, I think.
No, I mean, he's right. Because Bielsa likes overloads, and I can't think of a better overload than having twice as many players as them.
I think the key part of that was the way Gabby is in a changing room, isn't it? This manager is killing us. Well, we can't play like this. What's he do? Well, Tim Sherwood, he'd have us playing.
He'd have us off in the afternoons. We could go to the boozer. We could go to the bookies. It was great. It was a right laugh when he was there.
Never mind this one-on-one training.
This bloody frog's coming. He's got us running all hours of the day. Pathetic. I can't even... He said I count of 4 days off in a row. How am I meant to get to Dubai in that time? I mean, when you look at Gabby Agbonlahor from this time, he's getting a lot of criticism from Villa fans for basically being a lazy fat bastard who isn't interested in earning any of his £53,000 a week that he's getting paid, a contract that he remained on while they were in the Championship.
The other point here as well is talking about him going up against Sané. It's Sané and Mane. I've got your confusion going on.
It's Sané, Leroy. Sané.
Yeah, Bayern Munich.
He's not called Leroy.
Can be if you want. Do anything for this show. And he's saying he could come up against Sané. Well, no, he's not going to do because he's in the Champions League and we're not. And we're not in the Champions League because we've only just come up in the last couple of seasons and we're trying to develop our squad. So it's a completely false argument, isn't it? And yet when they do come up against the good teams, we've seen we get dicked this week when we've got injuries and all the rest of it. But
you've got to remember that in his system, you have two right backs.
Yeah,
which is going to make it easier.
But even still, you know, the point I'm making is you're not coming up against Sané every week. You're not coming up against Phil Foden and Sterling and all the rest of them. Most weeks we manage, you know.
If we get to the point where we are playing Bayern Munich in the Champions League, then bless him, I love him, I don't think Luke Ayling will be our right back. So we'll probably have a better right back who can maybe do a good job against Sané one-on-one.
So maybe it's just you have a squad capable of adapting to your circumstances.
If we have got into the Champions League with Luke Ayling, it's because he's got so much better than he is now that Sané won't be a problem. Much as you wouldn't have thought he could take on a wet paper bag when Paul Heckingbottom was in charge of him. But now he's regarded as one of the best right backs in the country who was on the edges of the England squad. How many caps does Gabby Agbonlahor have?
Well, it's interesting you come to pick on his career because that's what we're about to do after this next clip.
I'd love to play against Leeds. I'd be like, come on then, where's the goals? Let's go 1v1. I get past you. I'm through in on goal.
Let's look at his record.
How old is he now?
I don't know, actually.
Let's find out.
He's not actually as old as you think, but you can see why he retired when he speaks about these goals, because his last three seasons at Aston Villa, he got three.
He's one
per season.
He's 35.
35, okay. So he could still...
He's only 35?
Just turned 35 in October, yeah.
Could still be playing. Played his last game in 2017-18. But yeah, he got three goals in his last three seasons at Aston Villa. That's one goal in 11 games. That's good for a striker. And then in his life, if you think that's a bit harsh, because I know he had injuries and obesity and holidays to deal with in that time, which obviously hampered him. But if you look, even if you go back to his last eight seasons, he was only one goal in five. So
just to draw some comparisons here, he's younger than James Milner, who will be 36 in January in a couple of weeks. And obviously Cristiano Ronaldo, I know we don't like to hold him up as any sort of example whatsoever, but I'd
hold him up as an example of somebody to stay away from if you're on a lonely street on a dark night.
Absolutely, but I'm just saying, like, when you look at their relative physical performance, you can think what you like about him
Otherwise, I shouldn't have brought this up, should I?
Let's just leave Cristiano Ronaldo out of discussion. It's better to just pretend he's not
let's
around.
Let's go Joaquin, the Spanish winger. He's 40 and still playing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
If you want another comparison as well, Gabi Agbonlahor thinks that Bielsa is a joke. Gabriel Batistuta, almost too afraid to approach him because he reveres him so much. But then when he does, gets what he described as a soul hug from somebody he respects and admires.
Gabi Agbonlahor, 35, and his last acceptable Premier League season was probably 2009-10 when he got 13 goals.
Whereas Bielsa's last acceptable Premier League season, last season.
Exactly.
I think Bielsa would, if you put Bielsa into a Premier League team now, he'd score more goals than Gabi Agbonlahor.
And Christ, we've had Stan Collymore chirping up this morning. I don't think I can tolerate Collymore on top of Agbonlahor. It's too, I mean, no offence to anybody who's from the West Midlands. Love you dearly if you're listening to this, but it's a lot to take on in one day. Admittedly, it is only a newspaper column, but you would still hear it in that voice.
You do still hear it.
It comes down to, I've just skipped to the end.
Burnout.
It comes down to, yeah, actually, he has three questions. He says, I'd love to take up an invite to Thorpe Arch, which he spelt wrong. He's put an E on the end of Thorpe. Sea training and pose three questions. Why? Aged 60 odd. He keeps bringing Bielsa's age into it, and I don't know why. It was Stan Collymore who thought he needed to live in a gated mansion, wasn't it?
Yep.
Why, aged 60-odd, did he think having such a small squad was prudent, given this league is like a grand national, exhausting with loads of hurdles? Well, because it worked last season, so that's one. Do you give them plenty of rest? And if not, do you think burnout is an issue? I think he gives them rest. I think he's familiar with the idea of resting players. And do you feel, as a coach, even in your 60s, you can always learn different things from other coaches that can make you better as a manager? Well, what do you think he does when he's watching the finished third division? And an actual real example is when he had all his staff watching the World Cup to analyse new trends in set pieces. So yes, he's always learning, always studying the game to an extent that I imagine would blow Stan Collymore's tiny mind.
I've got a question. Given that you're a man in your 50s, do you think it's appropriate to sit in a darkened car park at night with your headlights off? Because he's 50 now, is Stan, you see.
Is he waiting to fight Graham Smith, or is it for something else?
Whatever he wants to do with his leisure time.
I mean, we are going to all have to go to Cannock and have a bare knuckle with him, because that is his standard response. After the Twitter block, or sometimes before the Twitter block, he'll offer someone a fight, and then he'll block them afterwards, won't he?
So. And just to spin back to the start of this article, Leeds have invited me to their training ground to see what Marcelo and the club are all about, which is very kind, and I'd love to. So I'll tell you what, go ask those questions. Will you ask them, will you fuck?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is it. I would also love to have an invite to Thorpe Arch. And if I were to accept it, I'd try not to ask three such fucking stupid questions. That would be my plan.
Mm. Okay. Well, let's
I've already answered for him. There's absolutely no need for him to go there and ask these stupid questions when absolutely anybody can answer them.
Ask something more insightful, like, where do you get these cones from?
He wants to travel all the way from Cannock to Thorpe Arch, which you can't spell, so he probably won't find it. And then go in there, sit Bielsa down and say, do you give the players any rest? Get out. Just stop wasting everybody's time.
And then he'll, of course, have to offer to fight a man in his 60s, which is...
Because that's the way he resolves people who disagree with him, isn't it?
Indeed.
It's through the old fisticuffs at Cannock Chase.
If they won't answer your stupid questions, punch them.
Hey, that does wrap up this episode of Propaganda. It felt like we vented a little bit there, and it feels like we'll come back from this, we'll all heal.
It's the way it's got to go. There's two ways. We've lost two games really badly this week, and the Chelsea one was annoying. You either get annoyed about Leeds United, and it is quite easy because Leeds United are quite annoying. Thank you, Gabby and Stan and the rest of you, Terry, for giving me something to rail against. I'm really happy that we lost those games, because this happened a bit last season when we lost to Scum 6-2, and it was that whole period of us like being the crazy result stuff. Everybody else in football was more annoyed about us losing 6-2 to Scum than we ever were. And I've now moved into that. I'm glad we lost those games. What, 7+4? 11-1.
13 in a week, Moscow.
Because of the way it's wound these idiots up.
So as long as we finished 17th, it was worth it.
Yeah, because it's all going to be fine. We're not going to be relegated. It will be fine. Bielsa's methods in the end will prove to be good enough to keep us in the Premier League for two seasons, which is what we asked him to do in the first place. And these people will have wound themselves up. He's ruining my Premier League. Good. I hope he stays around and ruins your Premier League for him. Well, that's the whole reason we're in the Premier League,
to ruin it for other people. And if the best way to ruin the Premier League for other people is to keep losing 7-0, that's what we're going to do.
Perfect. Do you agree with all that, Michael?
I mean, it's got a shelf life as losing 7-0 every week. I don't think we can continue to do that and ruin the Premier League.
Just win enough to stay in.
Okay.
But in the meantime...
Win 5 games and then lose the rest 7-0.
Yep. In the meantime, let's piss everybody off and then let's just come on here and take cheap shots at people for either the size of the club or for the regional accent. Is that all right?
They keep losing. Why do they keep singing? To annoy you.
We'll catch you in a bit.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.